culture is personified. Nothing is iti and shruti. Shruti refers to the Vedic literatures which are said to emanate from the breath of the Lord himself, and they're philosophical in composition. They're very philosophical texts. Examples are the Upanishads, the Vedanta Sutra, even Bhagavad Gita itself. And they're all considered to be very philosophical works. Then the other portion of the Vedas is called Purana. Now, Purana literally means old, something which is ancient. Now, the Puranas are spoken by sages. They're historical narratives, which come from in this Smriti section of the Vedas. Smriti literally means memory, remembrance. So what they remember from history, going back creations, generations, millions of years, kalpas, even like, you know, it's the time dimension is vast. So they remember all of the different historical occurrences which have taken place, and they record that and they repeat that for the benefit of everyone else. Now, the Smriti literatures, they're recorded in the shape of stories and pastimes. So you get the philosophy of the Shruti, but within the pastime or the palatable form of a lila within the Smriti. Yeah. Which means that it's easy for people to digest, particularly in Kali Yuga. Because people find it difficult to concentrate on anything inside of. Yeah, sugar or honey or something like that. You know, I remember when I was a kid, they used to get the tablets and grind them up and then put them in honey and then we'd eat it. Because then you could take it. But you need something like carrier. So in the same way, the pastimes of the Smriti, they carry the philosophy and much easier to digest, to meditate upon. People find it hard to stay awake in Shastric discourses quite often. Sometimes you're giving class and everyone's like, you know, they fall asleep. Because the pastime is there, I've told before. Nidra Devi, she said to the Lord, the goddess of sleep. Once again, she's personified. Everything is personified. So the goddess of sleep, she said to the Lord, I can't touch your devotees. Please give me somewhere where I can... just like sin personified, you know, the Paapurush. You know the story of Ekadashi. The Paapurush, the sin personified. He came. He said to the Lord, I have nowhere to enter. I can't influence people because your chakra is chasing me. He said, okay, you go in the grains on the Ekadashi days, the 11th day on the waning and waxing moon. You go into the grains, people eat the grains, and then come forward. So then, by eating the grains, sin will enter into human society. That's why it's important for devotees to follow Ekadashi. I see sometimes devotees get a little bit slack, some devotees on Ekadashi, but it will influence your consciousness. And I've seen devotees who don't follow strictly, they get influenced by this. Right? Unless you're very, very advanced, then nothing can influence you. But otherwise, you should follow strictly. So, Paapurush. So, Nidra Devi, she came to the Lord. I can't influence your devotees. Right? Give me a place where I can influence them. The Lord said, okay, in the Bhagavatam class. That's what you see. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Like that. Yeah. And how do you wake the devotees up? Smriti and the Shruti. They are in story form. They're part of the Smriti. And they have the history, the remembrance of the sages. Now, there are 18 major Puranas, 18 minor Puranas. Right? What are some of the examples of the 18 major Puranas?
Vishnu Purana.
Yeah, Vishnu Purana. Padma Purana.
Garuda Purana.
Garuda Purana.
Narsingha Purana.
Matsya Purana.
Yeah.
Which one?
Brahmana.
Brahmana Purana, yeah. Brahma Vaivata Purana. There's so many Puranas there. 18 major, 18 minor. The 18 major, 6 are in sattva, 6 are in for those in rajas, 6 are for those in tamas. So 6 are for those people in the mode of ignorance, 6 are for people in the mode of passion, 6 are for people in the mode of goodness. So out of the Puranas, if you look at the commentaries of acharyas over the years, over centuries and centuries and centuries, there's only 2 or 3 of the Puranas which have commentaries on them. Most of them don't actually have commentaries or purports. You just get the Purana, you get the verses, you don't get the commentary. Now, I think the Padma Purana has a few commentaries. Maybe the Vishnu Purana has 1 or 2 commentaries. But the Srimad Bhagavatam has multiple commentaries, which shows it is the most important of all of the Shastras, the Puranas. And if you study it, according to Vyasadeva himself, who compiled everything, all the Vedic literatures, he's the one who compiled everything at the beginning of Kali Yuga, then it is considered the cream of the Vedic knowledge. Right? It is the essence, the Vedasara, or the essence of all of it. And you can look at, if you look at it from another angle, it's the one that has the most commentary. So obviously it is the most important. It says it, and it is the one which is has had the most attention on it. Now, interesting, there is no Mayavad commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Shankaracharya did not comment on it. There's no purports. Comments. Why? Because when you're teaching, your philosophy is impersonalism, and everything, as we're pointing out, is personified. How can you comment on it? Because this book is all about personality. Bhagavat Purana. Bhagavat literally means personality. It means qualities, opulences. 6 qualities everyone has. Aishwaryasya, Samagrasya, Viyasa, Yasha, Shriya, Jnana, Vairagyas, Chaiva, Shanambhaga, Itinga. Bhaga means opulence. Right? Everyone has these 6. Aishwarya, wealth, right? Strength, fame, beauty, renunciation, and knowledge. Right? So everyone in this room, because we're people. If you're a person, hands up if you're a person. Okay, some of the kids have to check. They'll look at their parents. Okay. That's good. They come to class, they learn they're people. That's good. It's important. If you understand you're a person, your life becomes much easier. Right? If you think you're not a person, it is difficult. You will struggle in the material world. You have to understand you are a person. So, all of us have these 6 opulences. Huh? Who is the wealthiest person in this room? Right? All the brahmacharis have nothing, practically. So Aishwarya, you don't have much. You can't show Aishwarya. But you have a little bit. You can say, here's my watch. Here are my Birkenstocks. So you have a little bit of something. Right? So Aishwarya, right? Virya, who is the strongest? Right? Kali Yuga, everyone's becoming weak. You see it, all the people are becoming weak. Everyone's sick. 20-year-old devotees, my knees, I can't walk. Everyone's becoming weak. This is Kali Yuga's effect. Jagannath Balabha, he's like 72 or something. Previous generation. No major health problem. This is how people should be, strong, healthy. But when Kali Yuga influences you, and a lot of it comes from the mobile devices. People are holding these things all day. This is not a mobile device, I'm just using an example. But even a watch, actually, because it's an electronic during the day very much either, because now you've got a phone and there's the time. But if you have those devices next to you, they're actually weakening your constitution. You have to understand these things. Don't trust the people in Kali Yuga, because they're cheating us. They say, these things are good for you. Actually, there's disclaimers. If you go through all the conditions when you buy a mobile phone and you look at all the contract, it actually says, do not keep this device within 2 inches of your body. It actually says that when you buy it, but it's in small print, no one reads it. But it says, don't keep it within 2 inches of your body. Because they have to disclaim. Because then if someone takes them to court and says, this thing gave me cancer, because it does, or this radioactivity, And they say, well, we said in the contract, don't keep it 2 inches in your body. That's why it's there, actually. And that's why it's weakening the people, because you're going to see them all day now. People are just carrying it like this all the time. It's not good for the health like that. But everyone is cheating. They don't tell us these things. But this is the age of Kali Yuga. Actually, a few days ago was the anniversary, 49th anniversary, of when man landed on the moon. We have footage. They walked on the moon. No, it's more cheating. More cheating. We landed on the moon. Prabhupada says they did not. Prabhupada was on the planet, 1969, when it happened. He was in London. Prabhupada was in one room, they're in another room, they're watching a man walking, landing on the moon. And then Prabhupada said, they are not on the moon. He said it. Interesting. He was always ahead of the times. Now, 60% of the American public do not believe that man actually landed on the moon. Right? The other 40% do. But 60%, many people do not believe. And we can prove it in many ways. They did not land on the moon. And they'll say, well, we can prove they did. So choose who you want to believe. I believe Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.
So, whatever Prabhupada says, that is true. That's my personal belief. You make up your own mind. That's what I believe. So, everyone has these opulences, six opulences, to some degree. So then, Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavata. It's about the personality. That's why the Mayavadi could not comment on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it establishes God is a person. Now, just like at the moment we're studying in our Bhaktivedanta course, the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. It's all about God being a person. Aishwarya Yasha, Samagrata, Virya, Yasha, Shriya, Jnana, Vairagya. It's all there. And he shows it to an unlimited degree. Well, just like we just finished chapter 62-63. In the 10th canto, does anyone remember what takes place around about that time? King Nuga, that's 64. Yeah, that's what we're studying right now. But chapter 62 and 68, Krishna fights with Banasura. And this shows Krishna's unlimited potency. He's Aishwarya and he's Virya. Because who does Krishna fight with? There's a big fight. Banasura's army comes, Krishna's army comes, right? It's all over. Banasura has captured Aniruddha, Krishna's grandson, right? The Yadus, they say, we will not tolerate this. Krishna and Balaram stand up, Pradyumna, and they all charge up to Banasura's kingdom. Banasura brings his army. Banasura has been worshipping Lord Shiva. Right? Lord Shiva's son is Kartikeya. So then they come out to fight on behalf of Banasura and Krishna. So this shows Krishna's supreme position. Because no one in this universe can defeat Lord Shiva in battle. No one can beat him. He is Mahadev. He is immeasurably powerful. You can't understand how powerful Lord Shiva is. Right? It is there in the Mahabharata. There is one pastime where Indra approaches Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva takes the form of a young boy with golden complexion. And he's playing dice with young girls in the forest. So they're rolling, just playing dice like this. And the Indra walks in. Right? And as Shiva is playing dice, tears are coming from his eyes. Right? And as the tears come from his eyes, they land in the river, which is next to him, and they turn into golden lotus flowers. And then they float down the river. So his teardrops turn into golden lotus flowers and float down the river. Have you seen it? Who can do this? Who can do this? We must be crazy if we believe all this stuff. We're actually crazy. I mean, do you actually believe this stuff? Yeah. You go out the temple now and go down Dank Street. This is 197. You go to 195. Knock on the door. and say, excuse me, good morning, Hare Krishna. Lord Shiva, when he cries, the drops come and they land in the river, they turn into golden lotus flowers and they float down the river like that. And they will shut the door and say, okay, next time just bring some pakoras. And then they shut the door and then like that. They can't, who will believe it? You have to be crazy to believe this stuff. But we believe all this stuff. Why? Because we have faith, Shraddha, in the Bhagavatam. Right? So Lord Shiva, he's crying like that. They come down. So Indra, he is further down the river. He sees the flowers go past. So he thinks, where are these golden lotuses coming from? So he walks up the river, right? And then he comes and he sees Lord Shiva is there playing like this. And is Indra. Indra's very powerful. So Lord Indra says, excuse me. I notice that these golden lotus flowers are coming from your teardrops. Right? Lord Shiva doesn't even look at him, just keeps playing, and they're laughing and playing and playing dice. And then he becomes a little angry. Excuse me, young boy, I am Lord Indra. Pay attention to me. Right? And still, nothing. He just keeps playing like that. So he comes forward to touch him. Hey, listen to me. So as he comes forward, Lord Shiva just looks at him. Right? And just looking at him, Indra goes... He can't move. Just by Lord Shiva's glance. That's how powerful Lord Shiva is. Indra is the most powerful god. Right? Before Lord Shiva, just by his glance, he can't move. And Lord Shiva just laughs. He said, so many Indras have come here. So that's how powerful Lord Shiva is. Mahadeva. But then when he fights with Krishna... he is defeated. So this shows God is a person. He has strength, opulence, fame, knowledge, renunciation, all these opulences. This is the Bhagavatam. That's why the Mayavadis cannot come in, because he is a person. It's clear. But which person is he? Which person is Krishna? Supreme person. Purushottama. He is the most extraordinary person. There's no one like Krishna. He is the most extraordinary. That's what the Bhagavatam is establishing. Ete chamsa kala pumsa Krishna's tu Bhagavan swayam. He is the original personality. And everyone else is just a part of a part or an expansion of an expansion. Like that. But he is the supreme entity. So here, everything is personified. So who comes in this pastime?
Death.
Death personified. Death is a person. And when death comes to visit you, what will you say? Very good. Very good. That's what you have to say. Hare Krishna. And also, you can offer some pakoras. When death comes, you say, Hari Bol Prabhuji, here's some Mahaprasad. Because when someone gets Mahaprasad, they become very happy. So you have to get some Mahaprasad. You say, Hare Krishna. Death Maharaj, please. Hare Krishna. Here's some prasadam. Please do not hinder my journey. Let me go back to Krishna. So death came. Dhruva Maharaj was there. Death just bowed his head. Dhruva Maharaj stepped on his head and stepped into the aeroplane. To go back to Vaikuntha. So, Srila Prabhupada clearly says in this purport, and in many of his lectures and in many places, Prabhupada says that for a devotee, there is no fear of
death.
And I was listening to a lecture last week by one of my Shiksha gurus, and he was saying that death is simply a figment of the imagination. It is all in the mind. Death is simply in the mind. Because there is no death. Regardless if you get born again in this world or you go back to Krishna, there is no death. Right? Death is just something it's just something that happens to the body. But the soul does not die. But because of the influence of the material energy, Maya, we become fearful of death. Right? In the third canto, Kapiladeva says, there are five types of avidya which cover the conditioned soul in this material world. And one of them is called Asmita. What does Asmita mean? It means fear of death. Yeah, it's one of the five types of avidya. Avidya means ignorance. And then there are five subcategories: raga, dvesh, asmita. What are the other two? Raga, dvesh, asmita. And there's two more. Which are they? I can't remember. I don't have them firmly in my mind. But one of them is... What's that?
Pramad.
I don't think it's pramad. But I can't remember, but it's in there. It's in Kapila's teachings. So, asmita is one of the types of ignorance which cover the conditioned soul, which keep us bound in this material world. Raga and dvesh means attachment and rejection. You're attached to things in this world. Raga, that's what keeps you in this world, because you're attached. What are you attached to? Your saffron color. Some of them are attached. Some people are attached. Oh, I have to have saffron. I have to have saffron. I can't not wear saffron. If I don't wear saffron, then everyone will reject me. People won't respect me. Even white. I don't even know what I am. I'm halfway in between a sannyasi and a grihastha. I don't even know what color that is. Huh?
Off-white.
Off-white, yeah, very good. Off-white. I don't know what color that is, but anyway. But the point is that people become attached to the color. It's just a colour, that's all it is. But people are attached. Oh, no, I have to have that colour. No, it doesn't matter. In Lord Chaitanya's teachings, whichever colour you're wearing, that is insignificant. What is significant is your nama ruchi, your taste for chanting the holy name. I wore that colour for 8 years. A very good colour to wear. Very good. Because when you wear that colour, your life is... simple, right? You may not wear that color your whole life. You may, but you may not, right? So while you are wearing that color, take advantage of it, because it gives you freedom. You don't have to do anything. Prabhupada says brahmachari has three bags, or brahmacharini: book bag, sleeping bag, japa bag. Bus, that's your life. You're either you're sleeping, or you're chanting, or you're distributing books. That's nice. Brahmachari life. That's it. Hari Bol, Hare Krishna. Have you got any dye in the ashram? I will come and dye my cloth again, because that was, they were good days. That's all I did for 8 years. So nice, so nice. This is. So chanting the holy name. So I chanted the holy name for 8 years wearing that colour. And then one day, the colour changed. I decided to get married. I was advised by my guru and others. Get married. No. They asked me to become a temple president in Adelaide. So then they said, better you're a grihastha, like that. And, you know, it was my nature anyway, so then I took like that. So then I changed my colour. And then still chanting the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So when I was chanting holy name when I was wearing saffron, or when I'm chanting my grihastha, actually it doesn't make very much difference. I noticed that. It's one realisation I had. People are like, oh, I have to be this, so I have it. No, you don't. It's the quality of your chanting which attracts Krishna, nothing else. You know, when you go back to Godhead, Krishna doesn't look and say, oh, yeah, so what color are you wearing? Okay, that's the wrong color, saffron. Okay. Right? Krishna doesn't look like that. No. Krishna's mentality is, how are you chanting his holy? Where in the Bhagavatam does it say, Krishna speaks about the color of someone's cloth? As the qualification, the adhikar to go back to the spiritual world. But actually, what is the qualification to go back to Krishna? Bhagavatam clearly says in the second canto, Harinam Anu Kirtanam. The entire process which the Bhagavatam gives us to become self-realized is Harinam Anu Kirtanam. Anu Kirtanam. Anu means continuously. You have to chant the holy name continuously. And Anu means to follow. You continuously chant, following the great acharyas. Right? That's how you go back to Krishna. That is the system. So, as is being described here, death will come. But death is just in the mind. That's all it is. I'm not speaking from the platform of realization here. I'm speaking theoretically. Because in my consciousness, there is still some fear of death. Although it is becoming less over time, but there is still some fear. It is not. I'm not free from asmita, or this ignorance, completely. But by the process of bhakti, if we become sincere, then we will become free from the fear of death. And you can understand how advanced you are by how scared you are of death. If you're very scared of death, okay, you're less advanced. If you're not scared of death, you're fearless, then you are liberated. And we see some devotees, they don't have any fear of death. I've seen over the years, devotees pass away, no fear. So Prabhupada says in this purport, you cannot compare the death of a devotee and a non-devotee. I was there a few hours before my father passed away. And he was very fearful, I saw. He's a big, strong man, you know, big, you know, like chhatriya guy. But then, when death came, I was there with him a few hours before, he was crying. I could see he was scared. You know, because he had not transcended, not surrendered to Krishna. Because if you surrender to Krishna, then... One time I was in Mumbai, on the roof of one apartment building in Mumbai, one big building where people live, the apartment. So on the roof, they were having a program, Chaupati devotees, 400 devotees came on the roof. They took the whole roof up. And it was His Holiness Radhanath Swami's birthday, not Vyasa Puja, but actual birthday. Late November, I think it is, or early December, that time. So Maharaj, so they had birthday parties. So Maharaj came and Chandramoli Maharaj came. So Maharaj came and everyone sat, everyone was waiting. Right? Kirtan went on and on and on. And then Kirtan finished, then Maharaj sat down and everyone was listening. You know, what will Maharaj say? It's his birthday. Maharaj said, "We are all born to die." Very powerful. Anyone can say that, but when Maharaj says it, it's very powerful. Maharaj has liberated us all. So when I heard that, it had a very big effect on me. We are born to die. And he said, for the non-devotee, death is not attractive. But he said, for the devotee, death is all attractive. Because death means you will once again meet Krishna. So what is unattractive about it? So it's a big test. Krishna says, okay, you'll meet me, but at the time you meet me, I'll put you in the most fearful situation that you have ever experienced in your life. And will you still remember me even at that time? That's why he does it like that. Puts you in the most difficult situation, and he says, and by the way, remember me. So everything, all your sadhana is tested at the time of death. What will you do at the time of death? What will you meditate on? What will you hold on to? What will you focus on? Where will your mind be? Sounds easy, but see, when the test comes, where does the mind go? Does it take shelter in Krishna? If it takes shelter in something else, then you get born again. But if you take shelter of Krishna, then you go back to Goloka Vrindavan, and you live with Krishna in the spiritual world. So here, death personified comes, but for Dhruva Maharaj, it's not a fearful thing, because he's completely liberated from this material world. So we'll stop here. We'll see if there are any questions or comments, what we discussed. Yes, sir.
Thank you. You want to, can you explain also what the four other aspects of ignorance that Kapila Muni is mentioning?
No, because I can't remember. I already said that, I can't remember.
Okay, then a second question.
Yeah.
So, at least the people of fear of death, it's easy to preach to them, but these days people, they don't even have fear of death, they just don't care about anything. So how can we preach to them also?
If they don't have fear of death?
Yeah.
Everyone has fear of death. Everyone has fear of death. Maybe they say they don't have fear, but that's just... You know, like the ostrich puts its head in the ground. You heard that? Mm-hmm. They actually don't do that, but anyway, everyone, it's a good example. some danger is coming, the ostrich put his head in the ground. Oh, there's no danger, there's no danger. And then the lion eats the ostrich. So people, they say like that, they're not fearful of death, but everyone is fearful of death. Easy to say it, but not true. In 1992, I was distributing books in Adelaide, door to door, going around, knocking on the doors on the weekend. People opened the door and then selling Prabhupada's books. And then one man opened the door, old man. And we were talking, you know, having some nice conversation. He told me he was in World War II. He was in the war. In Gallipoli. You've heard Gallipoli? Gallipoli is famous for Australian war history. It's very famous. The Australians were in battle in Turkey. And it was a horrible situation. Horrible. And many of them died on both sides. And he was there. And he said bombs were dropping. And he said all the soldiers were in the trench. All the soldiers. And he said that before the bombs were dropping, 50% believed in God, 50% did not believe in God. But he said when the bombs started dropping, he said every man was on his knees praying to God. Save me, save me, save me, save me. So people say, I don't believe in death, I don't believe in God. Yeah, whatever, that's okay. But when bombs start dropping, you will change, you watch. Right? And bombs will come. They come in one form or another, but the material world will give you a good bombing at some point in time. So people say no fear of death. It's not true. If they choose to not be, then, you know, preach to them. Give them the holy name, give them prasadam. You know, and then those who have some realization, then preach to them. Those who don't have realization, then just give them prasadam and holy name. But then you find amongst a group, you know, so Prabhupada says on every corner, every street corner, there is a devotee. So 20 people are waiting to cross the street. Collins Street, Swanson Street on the corner. You know, when the lights are stopped, you see there's 20 people. One of them is a devotee. So you've got to find that devotee. That's hard. But when you find that person, that one person will listen. Then you can teach them. Anyone have the five yet? Do we find them? They're in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras as well. He speaks of the five. One is raga, one is dvesh. It means attachment and rejection. They're two of the ignorances which cover us. One is asmita. I think one is avidya, which means ignorance itself. And then there's one more. Yeah, which means? Oh, is that the fear for death? Then what's asmita? Yeah, but they're the opposite. Yeah, good. Okay. Yeah. Apinivesh. That's actually the fear of death. Yeah. And there's asmita. There is raga, dvesha. And what's the other one?
Avidya, raga,
dvesha.
Avidya, smita, raga, dvesha, and avidya.
Yeah, okay. They're the five. So asmita means the material energy or ignorance makes us feel that one thing is one way, but it's actually the other. Right? So a boy sees a girl. Right? A girl sees a boy, and they think, that will give me happiness. But deep within, that karmic situation is exactly the opposite thing. It is distress. So that's the material energy. That's ignorance. We think, oh, I'll be happy. And then, actually, it is completely the opposite. Just like people sometimes, they save all their money, buy a ticket, fly to Hawaii to be happy, because then, you know, I'm on the beach and it's sunny and everything, and it rains for 2 weeks non-stop. So then it looks like it's one thing, but actually it's another. That's asmita. Apinivesh means fear of death. Raga, dvesha, and then there's ignorance, the just generic type of ignorance, of just forgetting Krishna. Okay. So these are the five. If you look in Kapila's teachings in Third Canto, it gives the definition of the five. It's also in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. He discusses it also. It's also in Madhuya Kadambini by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. He mentions these two. Any other question? Yes, sir.
You mentioned that we should be human nature is that, you know, you tend to do your own endeavor. So how should one train his mind?
What is your point?
Just a question, how should I train my mind to always the Akshaya Tritiya question?
Come to the temple. It's, the question is obvious. How do you train your mind? Everything we do is training our mind.
You go out, you work,
that,
you do other activities.
That's your problem. You, that's your choice. Join the ashram. What's your problem? Who's making you go out to work? Right? Is anyone stopping you from joining the ashram?
You.
No. You are. Yeah, you are. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now you want to go out and work. That's your problem. You work out how to remember Krishna. Okay, so Rupa Goswami says you have to give 50% of everything you earn to Krishna, then you remember him. You watch. Right? You go out to work, you got a job? Okay, so you go to work this week, you say you get $800, hypothetically. You give $400 to Krishna, right? You'll be thinking of Krishna, I tell you. Isn't it? Isn't it? Yeah. So every ashram has its way of becoming purified. Right, brahmachari, how do they become purified? Vidya means knowledge. If you're brahmachari or brahmacharini, you have to cultivate knowledge. That's how you become purified. If you don't cultivate knowledge as brahmachari or brahmacharini, you don't become purified. Right? Grihastha, how do they become purified? Dana. Right? You give $400, man, you're going to be purified. I tell you. I tell you, you'll be purified. You'll be as purified as a brahmachari if you give, right? That's why it's up to you how much you give. That's your choice. But if you give as a grihastha, you become purified. Dana. If you don't give, you know, you keep too much for yourself, you won't become purified. Then vanaprastha. How do they become purified? Huh? Tapa. Yeah. Tapa, austerity. Vanaprastha. Vanaprastha means the husband and wife, you go through a grihastha ashram, and you get to like 50, hypothetically. You know, you have kids at 25, hypothetically. Just like, Sri Krishna Prabhu, you know, in this temple, Sri Krishna, you know? And Nirmala Krishna, you know who I'm talking about? His wife and, you know.
Yeah.
So then their children just got married, right, the other day. Abhishek just got married, right? And Sweta got married last year. What's that?
This year in January.
This year in January. Yeah, so Sweta got married, and now, like, so, okay, they've gone through a grihastha life. They're older now. The kids are married. Now it is vanaprastha. Vanaprastha means the kids have left home. You don't have so many responsibilities. Now the husband and wife, they focus more on spiritual life. They do tapasya, some austerity, to purify themselves to reach Krishna. So that's what, and if you don't do that, it, like when, once the kids are old and you've gone through a grihastha ashram, you don't start doing some austerity and becoming more renounced, you don't get purified. Right? And then the final ashram is sannyas. And how does he become purified? Satyam. Preaching the param satyam, dimihi. Bhagavatam says, first verse. You must preach the param satyam, the supreme truth. If the sannyasi is not preaching the supreme truth, he doesn't become purified. Right? So each ashram has its mode of operandus or way of becoming purified. So you're saying, how do I become purified?
It's more like when you have a difficulty at that time, how to take shelter of Krishna rather than doing one's own
endeavor. Then that's personal choice. Okay, I've got a, that's my watch, right? It's in my hand now, right? I've got a choice. Right? I'm going to throw this watch right now. I'm either going to throw it right to the right, or I'm going to throw it to the right or to the left. Right? Which way am I going to throw it? That's my choice. So it's your choice. You remember Krishna or don't remember Krishna, that's your choice. Say, how do I do it? Do it. Does it make sense? It's like, I'm going to get up after I finish class. What am I going to do? I'm going to serve Krishna today. Sannyasi should know, I'm going here, I'm going here, I'm going here, I'm going here, right? I'm going from Australia to New Zealand to South Africa to, you know, look, that's, He knows 6 months. That's his service for Krishna. So all of us should be like that. We should all live like that. Like, I know what service I'm going to do for Krishna. That's your choice. If you do the service, you'll remember Krishna. Very simple, isn't it? Devotees always ask these questions, oh, how do I remember Krishna? Just remember him. What's the problem? I can remember Krishna now. Hare Krishna. Oh, there's Krishna. Oh, now I'm in the temple, which is the most auspicious place. There he is right there. I can remember him. Is it hard to remember him? No, because he's standing right there. If you're at work, you work on IT, or you have a computer or something, yeah. So screensaver, you have Radha Balabha on the screen or something like that, right? So then, you know, just by my wife, became a devotee. She said, who is that? Right? And that's how she became a devotee. And he said, oh, this is, he is God. You know, in the Hare Krishna movement, I'm a Hare Krishna, like that. And she said, oh, is it? Can you teach me more about this? Brought her to the temple, bang, now devotee. Right? So how do you remember Krishna? You make the choice to remember Krishna. You're at your work, you can do like that. I know a number of devotees. They're at work, they're supposed to work 8 hours a day. Right? They're on computers, all these things. But I know many devotees who 1 hour of those 8 hours, 7 hours they're working, the other hour, on the screen when no one's around, they're reading Bhagavatam, or, you know, company pays them, but they're doing service. Many devotees do all this kind of thing. A lot of cheating going on. Have to do it. Remember Krishna. Huh? You tell me. You're right, just telling me all the things he does. Yeah, at work. You know, how much is it? You work about 5-6 hours, right? And three. And then 5 hours you do reading and chanting and stuff. Yeah, so is that they pay him for 8 hours, he does 3 hours work, and the rest of the time he does seva. Right? So if you can do that, that's very smart. Do it. Let them pay you and you make advancement. Which you have. And then if you can't do it, you know, like that, then you have to work out how to remember Krishna in other ways, like that. Or sometimes, you know, you have to do your work, but in your mind, you're thinking, I wish I wasn't doing this. I wish I could just serve Krishna. So in any way you can remember Krishna, that's up to you. Does it make sense? Okay.
Just when we had, like, for a few people, we like, okay, the Vishnu Dutta will come and get them. But in this case, the two associates of the Lord came and for Dhruva Maharaj, but still death came as well. So is it like if it just can happen anyway?
No, death means when you die, death is there. You die. So the personality of death comes, that's all. No, Yamaraj means... Yamaraj doesn't come when you die. He sends Yamaduta. The king doesn't come. He sends the soldiers, bring him back, that's all. So Yamaduta come. Yamaduta is for sinful people. Not for devotee, not for pious people. So.
Is there like...
No, he's a separate personality. Death personified. He's a personality, he comes. Well, that's all. Yes, sir.
So for sinful people, the Yamadutas come, for the devotees, the Vishnudutas come, for the pious people, also the Vishnudutas come, or it comes for the pious people?
Not Vishnudutas, but they'll be taken to their next birth. I'm not sure by who, whether it's just arranged by the material energy, or whether someone actually carries them to that place, or... But generally you go, it's like if you die and you've been very sinful, you die and then you go to, the Yamadutas take you to Yamaraja's loka and you've been very sinful and then Yamaraj says, okay, now you go to a hellish planet for millions of years. So you go down, you suffer like in the Bhagavatam and then you come back and then you're thrown into your next body. So that time that you go from when you die to your next body, that's like a couple of moments. But then Yamaraj in his world, time goes, extends out, and all this stuff takes place, and then it comes back. But in this realm, it's just a few moments like that. So, time is different all over the universe, different types of time. So.
No,
yes,
no question to the point before.
Yes,
I was reading in Bhagavatam that if you So Krishna, it is like having a paramour. And actually you should be even more careful in executing your material duties. So how can we combine it with this advice that people should only work half as much and then use other time to serve Krishna?
What do you mean?
Because I thought I read that actually you should execute your material duties even more carefully. And not be slack.
What do you mean?
Question is that basically it means that when you're working, then if you can do 5 hours of, you know, like Niraj does, he does 5 hours of reading and chanting, yeah. 3 hours of actual work, then that's first class. But then in that 3 hours, right, he does the 8 hours that the company expects. So that's, you know, most of the time they're wasting time anyway. You know, so if you can do 3 hours and they're going to pay for it, that's their problem. You know, you do the 3 hours. And, you know, so devotees, they need to be very intelligent how to get away with things. So. Any other question?
In the translation of this written, not caring for that, no matter to the advantage of the world, could you see? Is it not an option? Of course, no matter is pure devotee. He can do anything. But otherwise,
offense. Step on someone's head?
Yeah,
you don't step on someone's head. You don't step on someone's head. One time, Prabhupada was sitting on the Vyasasan, not here, but somewhere, and the devotees, they had to do some work above Prabhupada. They were fixing something. And they said, Prabhupada, can you please move so that we can... And Prabhupada said, you can stand on my head to serve Krishna. Then Prabhupada moved. But he was making the point. So, any other question? Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Sure.